Good morning, and welcome to Uncle Paul's Jazz Closet, your local radio show about jazz drummer Paul Modian. And this is your host, Cindy McGurl. And I want to thank my partner, the Camden Conference, that helps to bring the show on the air. I'm pretty excited today to have a live guest in the studio, Richard Poole. He is a musician and drummer from the Boston area. And he actually grew up in Milo, Maine, I heard. So that's kind of interesting, I think. And he just came out with an album called In Motion that was recorded in remembrance of Paul Modian with Gary Peacock and Marilyn Crispell. And you want to say hello, Richard? We can see if you sound okay.
Hello, everyone.
That sounds good. Okay. So tell us a little bit about how this album came about. So you just had, were you talking to somebody or you were talking to?
A friend of mine who works at Draper Labs in Cambridge gave me a copy of a CD of Marilyn Crispell. And it was solo CD, and I listened to it and liked her playing. So I went down, she lives in Woodstock, New York. I went down and met her and talked with her, and we decided to record. And I asked her who her favorite bass player was, and she said, Gary Peacock. So I called Gary, and we arranged a recording session in Woodstock and recorded this CD in two afternoons. Yeah, right in Woodstock, and it came out great, and we put it out.
Yeah, and it's all improvised, correct?
Yes, we're improvising musicians, and to be an improvising musician at a high level, you have to take into account every millisecond of the music, because you respond to what you're hearing without a predetermined idea. So you have to... You have to take your technique and knowledge and add it on to the sound. And, of course, the longer you play, it's a process of elimination, what you don't need to play. You play what you need to play to make the music sound good.
Okay. And its album is put out by Intica Records?
Records in Switzerland.
Okay, it's got a kind of a funny spelling there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to listen to the first cut. Azan, is that
right.
How you pronounce it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And then we'll be back with some more chatter.
Thank you.
And that was Azan. And so is that attributed to all three of you, all of the cuts on this In Motion CD, Richard?
Yeah, except for one of them is Gary Peacock's.
Uh-huh.
I forgot which one. But basically, it was combined improvisation. And that's our art form, is to take it, we show up. By the way, the three of us had never played together before. But in our art form, that's... can work to your advantage. In other words, it's new information, and you feed upon that.
So, how do you start a tune? Like, so do you talk some, or does somebody just start playing a few notes? Or
well, the best way before you record, we went out to lunch the day before and had lunch and talked and socialized.
Mm-hmm.
And I've knew Gary Peacock off and on for years. And at New Maryland, because I went out there to meet her before then. So we didn't really discuss it. They asked me if I wanted to bring in my pieces to play. And I thought about it, and I said, well, not really, because if I bring in my pieces and they don't play them like I play them, then I'll say, well, something's wrong, you know. So I wanted to, we're all improvisers, really. And mm-hmm. all you really have to do to an improviser is squeeze them and the music comes out. Treat them nicely. And that's what we've relied on.
So you play a bunch of cuts, and then you go back and title them, or how does that work?
In that case, some of them were titled beforehand, and most of them we title later.
Uh-huh.
They're various mood pieces. And this is a very moody CD. And it's emotional and moody and musical, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so talk a little bit about how you wanted to do this in remembrance of Paul Modian.
Well, Paul, I knew him, had talked with him and knew him for years. And he'd passed away, I think, the year before or shortly before then.
2011.
Yeah. So this was after that, a few years after.
Uh-huh.
So, and thinking about it, I was thinking, well, there are three people here. They played with him and I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, let's just... commemorate his life and do some improvisation.
Yeah, so you're kind of thinking about him and
talking
about him.
Yeah.
And Gary Peacock, very long time player with Paul Modian,
right?
Starting back in 1960.
Yeah.
And played with him right. I think the last year that mm-hmm. Paul was alive.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few albums from Marilyn Crispell where Paul plays the drums too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have another cut from this CD that we can
cue up? Well, let's shake it up a little bit. Let's see, play the third one.
The third one?
Yeah.
Okay. And
Dichotomy.
Dichotomy.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a tune called Dichotomy. You guys really shake it up on there.
One thing I want to mention that we recorded that in Woodstock, New York, November 6, 2014, at Nevesa production in Woodstock. And the engineer is Chris Anderson, who's a very good guy. He mixed and mastered it. He's very good at what he does.
Oh, he took that. Did he tease the same Chris Anderson who took the photo of the three of you?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I credited him on I used it on the Facebook post. Yeah, it's a nice picture.
Yeah, he's recorded and traveled and recorded a lot of very famous people around the country and out of the country. I wanted to mention him. He's a good guy.
Yeah, and so we were just talking a little bit about sort of your life in music. So you said you're 67, is that what you said?
67 years old. I've probably done everything there is almost possible to do in the music business one time or another. Every type of music and every dimension of music. And I end up doing this because otherwise I would be doing something I knew how to do and it went the same way every time. Such as playing in a symphony orchestra or playing in a show band or playing with a rock and roll group, which I don't do anymore, but I have the tinnitus to prove that I did it. I lived in Miami for years and played with people from all over the world, and that was a great joy.
Yeah.
And we all got along, and I wish the world got along like we all did. And I remember being in Jamaica when they were working on what they call rugga. And they were showing me how they did the music and they had to have a special Ludwig bass drum. And they would talk on and on about this music, rugga. And later, I heard it on the radio and they were calling it reggae. And I said, why are they doing that? You always told me it was called rugga. He says, well, the guys in New York thought that name wouldn't work, so they changed it to reggae.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, reggae, I can see it. It sounds a little smoother.
Life is good, you know. Rugga didn't work.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah, well, now you know it.
So let's talk a little bit about the jazz tribe. We talked a little bit about that yesterday.
Jazz tribe isn't for everyone, and it isn't for all musicians. And some people are very happy doing club dates or having a show that they do. And others tire of that, and they want to move on into the dimension of music, which might be a higher form of language beyond the written word or the vocal word, which we won't know for a long time in the future. But the music is multidimensional, and that's what I like about it. And you can always grow with the music, as opposed to some music you can't grow with anymore. If you're going to do an Elvis Presley show, you better do Elvis Presley. Or, you know, if you're going to do a Benny Goodman show, it better be Ben, you know, sound like Benny Goodman. You know.
So do you think you grew up in Milo, but you got exposed to jazz there or no? Was that later?
Actually, my father played the piano in the silent movies. He grew up in Monson. I'm not sure where he played up there. Maybe Dover Foxcroft or Monson. But he played in the silent movies and said he was the richest kid in town because they actually paid him, you know, to do that. So I grew up with the American Songbook, and the two old ladies who lived up the street, they weren't old actually, but I was young then, played ragtime. So my father was a stride piano player, and he did it very well. He played a lot of gigs, but he got into the insurance business. He had too much common sense to stay in music. And he used to tell me when I was young, because it looked like I was going to go into music, he would say, well, now, Dickie, the music business has never been any good since the talkies.
Since the talkies?
Yeah. And he was right because back before sound on movies, there were many, many musicians who made a living, a middle-class living, playing in orchestras and movie theaters. So that's – and the ladies up the street played ragtime really good. Ida McKinney played, and there was another – Mrs. Keefe played ragtime piano, and they played great. They really did. With ragtime, I liked stride in the American Songbook after ragtime. Ragtime really wasn't, it was half jazz and half classical. And it was so busy rhythmically in the bass that there wasn't any room for improvisation or taking a melody and playing with it. There was no room for playing with the sound, having another idea about it. But the Great American Songbook really is not just show tunes. The Great American Songbook goes back to, started in 1900. I mean, they're great, great songs that have been played over the years. And that caught my attention. My father had a collection of LPs that I listened to, and he had all the big bands, and he knew all the big bands, and I listened to them. And I can remember being in high school, he would listen to Lawrence Welk, and I'd say, well, I prefer Count Basie or Duke Ellington. I like the real stuff. And he listened to them too, but he liked the other stuff also. So we had a contradiction on that. My mother agreed with me. Dickie's right. Those guys, But I noticed last year I turned on a channel and the Lawrence Welk show was on. I was listening and I was saying, well, those guys played pretty good, So you come around,
Yeah.
But it's been a great adventure through music. I like to call it my million-dollar career, which represents the amount of money I lost by staying a musician.
And so some gigs you do just for money and some gigs you do for love. And
yeah, it goes, it's a whole nine yards. But what happened to me is I was actually quite successful in Miami playing a lot of gigs that paid a lot of money. And I did them for a few years and then I started going into the suburbs or the jazz clubs and playing because I really always was a jazz musician. I just had the ability to do these other things. I could play club dates. I could play big band club dates, small club dates. I could play in the symphony orchestra. I just couldn't do it 2 weeks in a row without my mind wandering. But when I play jazz, my mind didn't have any time to wander. I was wandering with the music instead of wandering while I was playing the music and bored with it. Instead of daydreaming, my mind was involved.
So you learned from playing, really. You didn't go to school.
No, I did. I went to schools, but I was never really properly institutionalized. But I went to Northeastern Conservatory and studied at Berklee College of Music for a couple of years. But I always wanted to be a player, so as soon as I started playing gigs around Boston, I didn't go to Berklee. I was a player. I was able to go out and make money and play.
Yeah.
Other friends of mine stayed there because they ended up teaching. And I taught for years, but I really didn't teach that much institutionally.
Yeah, more private lessons.
Right, and I don't really miss it. Some days maybe I missed it when they might have made more money than me some years, but not really. I haven't missed it.
Yeah. So you play mainly the drums, but you play piano?
I played a lot of gigs around Boston on piano, solo piano. And I'm getting ready to record solo piano again. I play vibraphone also.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I just came back from Toronto where I played vibraphone for Sonar Vista label, Jordy McDonald up in Toronto. And we did a CD called Au Revoir, Paul, for Paul Blais, who passed. And Jordy knew him for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
Since he was a kid.
And you were saying you knew Paul Blais as well.
I've known him long. I was the best man at his last wedding.
We only had two. That wasn't,
Three.
Oh, we had three? Okay. So... let's listen to something else. We brought a bunch of CDs in.
Well, let's play Paul Modian.
Okay.
Let's see.
Let's see what we got.
Did we bring any?
You want to do that one?
Yeah. Put something on it.
We've got It Should Have Happened a Long Time Ago. And you were saying you saw the Lovano Frizzell Modian trio at Ryle's.
At Ryle's in Boston in the mid 80s. And I went up to him. I said, Paul, everyone's telling me I play like you. I knew who he was, but I was so busy with my own career, I wasn't following him. I had too many. And he was kind of gruff. He says, "Well, you think it's easy?" You know, he's like kind of gruff, but that was kind of his nature. But later on, we became great friends.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to play two women from Padua. Yeah. I was just working on this composition for the new songbook that's going to be out, I don't know, soon, I hope. I haven't talked about it much because it keeps getting delayed, but yeah. I think I'm getting really close.
Thank you.
Hey, you just heard two women from Padua, and that is from the album It Should Have Happened a Long Time Ago from ECM Records, with Paul Modian on drums, Bill Frizzell on guitar, and Joe Lovano on tenor saxophone. So that's the first live Paul Modian trio that you saw, or first time you saw Paul playing live?
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you feel like you had some similarities in your approach to drumming, or
what? Well, some, and we played differently, but we both understand the, we're both master drummers, master percussionists.
Yeah.
But no one should play like another person. Not in our jazz world. Everyone goes for their own thing, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, Paul used to get mad if he said, "Don't copy me."
Never copy Paul. And, you know, he wouldn't try to copy me.
Yeah.
When I used to catch him in New York, I'd always sit next to him, and he'd turn around and see me and say, "What do you want, Paul?" And I'd say, "I'm here to steal some of your licks," and he'd laugh, and he'd be playing. You know, funny guy.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about, you seem to you've done a lot of interesting things, and I knew when you sent me the CD, I recognized your name because John Voight had given me the CD that you did with Lowell Davidson.
Yeah.
But you said you didn't really know him that well, Lowell.
No, but I did hear him play in Ball Square in Somerville with John Voight, and the drummer's name was Cook. I can't think of his first name right now, but. And he had a suit on and played very conservative, and I'd heard about him. I said, "Is this guy that's supposed to be so far out?" And he was a minimalist. So I talked with him and said, "Well, let's record." And I went by his house to meet him, which was a whole, we don't have enough time to talk about that. He was an extreme character. And, we went out to record. Yeah, I think it was out in Western Massachusetts. I forgot where. And we played. I didn't even know what he was going to play. I said, "Do what you want to do." I didn't know what instrument he was going to play, because he plays a steel bass. He plays piano. And I really didn't put any restrictions on him. I said, "Well, you just go out there and do what you want to do." I didn't bring my drums. I had my vibes at that time playing with him. And he played piano and flute, some flute he found inside the piano, and started playing that. And started singing, which I had no idea. So once he started singing, the technician put a microphone to hear him sing. But he eventually took over the session and smoked me. He was like such a character.
Uh-huh. You know?
And I put the recordings away on the shelf for 25 years, or a long time.
Yeah, 1988, it says this was recorded.
Right. And I started thinking about him, and I copied it out into modern format. And listened and decided to put it out, because he had a kind of a strange life. You know, he's totally brilliant, and yet seemed to have mental issues where he had trouble getting along with people. And I liked him, but he would never stop talking while I was with him. I was with him for 2 days off and on, and he talked the entire time in a very low key. He would discuss music. He would discuss what he's doing, but he would never stop talking. And I said, "Lowell, you should get a job as a court guard. You'd have to stop talking while you're in the judge's chamber." He said, "That's an interesting concept." And then he talked about that for 10 minutes. It was like, he was impossible.
Yeah.
I did like him, but, and then, at the end of the session, I took him back home. We parted ways.
Yeah. This is pretty close to the end of his life, right? Didn't he die in 90 or 91? So Paul Modian, he loved Lowell Davidson and really admired him. And Bill was telling me that Lowell used to come to Ryle's a lot, and Paul was always very anxious to get his opinion on the music. And
You know, with my life, with busy raising my kids, and a lot of my friends passed, and I didn't even know it till later. And I would have gone to his funeral, But I didn't know he passed till 2 years later.
Uh-huh.
But the last thing, he left a message on my phone saying he didn't need the recording, as Arnett Coleman had called him to record with him.
I think you need to come a little bit forward,
yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, yeah. So that's the story with him. He, you know, but what a character.
Yeah. So what cut would you say that you're on there? That would you should we play?
Well, let's see what the cuts are. To the first one.
The first one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and the name of it is?
It is Early Spring.
Okay. So this is.
This is the, mostly I just put on this all his material, and a lot of my material that I recorded, I didn't put on.
Yeah.
Because I thought this is his last hurrah.
Uh-huh.
This is the last thing that ever came out. I wanted all, whatever I could get from him out of this.
All right. I don't know why it's telling me this is a 42-minute song. I don't think it is.
No, it's not. No.
Weird. Oh, I know what it is. We've got some new CD players here, sorry. Okay, there we go. Thank you. That was Lowell Davidson on piano vocal and vocals, and Richard Poole on vibraphone from the fairly recent release. Do you remember what year this was? Yeah, 2013, but it's a 1988 recording session that Richard Poole did with Lowell Davidson. And okay. Let's see. That's
probably the last thing he recorded. My guess.
Yeah, because he died a couple years later. Okay, that's only a couple minutes, so we can talk for a little bit.
Okay.
And then we'll play it. I was just saying that when I played that Eddie Costa last week, I was thinking hardly anyone plays the vibraphone anymore. But you were just saying, tell them what you just told
me. I played vibes for years, but I put them in my shop for 20 years and didn't really play them. I was going to sell them, and then I started getting calls to play the vibraphone, and I started playing again. I went to Canada and played them a few times, and the music went around the world, somewhat. And everyone was—I guess I have a unique style on vibes. I really don't sound like anyone else. One critic said I sounded ghostly. I like that because the vibes are a higher dimension than the piano. And I like the piano, but when you go into vibraphone, when I play the vibraphone plays me. So I think I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
And the vibraphone won't let me. I go with what the vibraphone tells me to do. It's a higher element. It really is.
So you mean like spiritually? You feel more connected to it, and it takes you to a different place?
I don't play the vibraphone technically the way everyone plays the vibraphone. Although I studied to play it that way, the vibraphone won't let me play it that way. The vibraphone tells me what to play. I can't tell the vibraphone what to play.
Uh-huh. So it's a perfect matchup for improvising because it sort of comes kind of easy. And,
it is. It's very ethereal.
Yeah.
Heavenly.
Interesting. Okay, so we're going to hear a tune called Reminisce from the Lowell Davidson Richard Poole CD. Okay, I hope you could hear Richard that last little conversation we had. It might have been a little soft. I made a little mistake. Sorry. So we've got a couple minutes to the top of the hour. So I think I'll play just enough time. No, I don't have enough time for that. So Richard wanted to bring Paul Blay back into the conversation. And I've got the ECM CD, Not Two, Not One, with Paul Blay, Gary Peacock, and Paul Modian. And let's see if we've got a short song we can play. This is a Gary Peacock tune called Entelleche. Do you think that's how that's pronounced?
Entelleche. Sounds like something a jazz musician would say. It's very intellectual. I like it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we'll give that a listen. We've got just a few seconds till the top of the hour. So that was a Gary Peacock tune, Entelleche, from Not Two, Not One, with Paul Blay and Paul Modian. And Richard Poole also did a CD, Au Revoir, Paul, and that's a tribute to Paul Blay.
Right. Yeah.
And we'll listen to this when we come back. And who plays on this with you?
It's Jordy McDonald, and there's another drummer who's a great drummer. Let me see if I can remember his name. John Ruddle, Ruddle, R-U-D-E-L.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I don't know the clock. Oh, yeah, there we go. Okay. We'll be back in a couple minutes.